Child abuse and neglect are problems throughout the state, but with the proper supports, they're preventable. Community groups in the Mat-Su region are working together to do just that. Today on Talk of Alaska, we'll learn about Rock Mat-Su, a region-wide partnership that involves health providers, schools, judges, child protection services, and many others. Together, they're building community support networks, strengthening families, and working toward the goal of raising our children with kindness. Stay with us.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Ann Hillman. It's often challenging for organizations to work together, especially if they're already overtaxed. But Rock Mat-Su is taking time to build relationships and partnerships to prevent child maltreatment and strengthen families in the Mat-Su Valleys and beyond. Today, we'll talk about how they're making it work and what they've accomplished. This episode is part of Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk, where you can find more stories and conversations about strategies for building community. My guests today are Desiree Shepler, who's the director of Rock Mat-Su, Mark Lackey, the executive director of CCS Early Learning, and Dawn Adams, the regional permanency specialist for the Office of Children's Services. Thank you all very much for joining me.
Good morning.
Good morning. And for the listeners, what are you doing to help keep children safe? How do we prevent child maltreatment? Share your ideas and stories by calling 1-800-478-8255 or here in Anchorage, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. So thank you all for being here. Desiree, what exactly is Rock Mat-Su?
Sure. So Rock Mat-Su is Raising Our Children with Kindness, and we are a cross-sector collaborative working to promote resilient families and end child maltreatment in the Mat-Su borough.
How did it get its name? What is that?
We actually went through a naming process and went with the name that the community selected. It was, I think, very overall appreciated, this sentiment that our goal collectively is to raise our children with kindness. It's a very, I think, approachable name.
Okay. So you're there to build resilience and strengthen families. Can you give me kind of concrete examples of how this works, Dawn?
We have several work groups, and so Mark is one of the co-chairs for the steering committee that oversees all the different work that we do. So with the primary prevention committee is the primary group that targets a lot of the different focus areas. And so we've done things like community baby showers in conjunction with our Mat-Su Regional Hospital. We have coordinated and deployed ACE interface trainers, and that is actually how I originally got involved as an ACEs trainer. And it was an amazing opportunity because I got to study under Dr. Anda, who was one of the original authors of the study.
And I'd definitely like to talk about that in more detail later, what ACEs are. ACEs are adverse childhood experiences.
Yes. And so some of the other trainings that we've been trying to deploy, it's called the Darkness to Light, the Stewards of Children training. And the idea behind that is we are shifting the focus from teaching our children how to keep themselves safe to the adults in the children's lives to either structure the way policies are designed or the way school programs or after school programs or youth programs are designed. So the adults are intentionally looking at their policies and how they supervise children. So the adults in the children's lives are focusing on how to keep children safe.
I'd like to pause there for a second. You said that initially programs were focusing on how children can keep themselves safe.
To speak from what I do professionally, every focus on our visits is we talk to our children about good touch and bad touch, and that really that, to me, you're putting the responsibility on the child to discern what is safe and not safe, and relying on a child to be able to then disclose if something unsafe has happened to them, whereas the intention behind Stewards of Children is, of course, putting it on adults to report, and as you know, that's obviously been a big thing in the news lately, and keeping our children safe, but also looking at supervision and just the policies. You know, I know, like with Mark, he always, with his program, he makes sure there's always two adults with children. So those are some of the procedural things that Stewards of Children will have you just pause about and think about, how does your organization structured in order to keep children safe?
Okay. Desiree.
Yeah. So I guess the one thing I would say about our primary prevention work is really focused on how do we keep all families, or how do we strengthen the social fabric of our community to keep all families strong. So the resilience piece you were talking about, we really kind of break down through, like Dawn said, the training opportunities. How do we build up knowledge and awareness of our in our community about, you know, ways to keep kids safe, or kind of the effects of trauma or the hope of resilience. But we also do a lot of work there around increasing social connections. So Dawn referenced our community baby shower that happens annually, and then we host family dance parties. So mm-hmm. our goal is really to open the number of opportunities for free events that families can attend to make new connections with family members or with other families, or reconnect with friends and family that they might not have had an opportunity to see, while enjoying some, you know, dancing and Hello Kitty DJing.
Hello Kitty DJing, that wild imagination thoughts with that one. Mark, I'd like you to, like, when people talk about child maltreatment and talk about abuse, you don't think Hello Kitty DJs. You don't think a baby shower. Like, how are you getting from these what seem like just kind of fun-filled community events to this ultimate goal?
Yeah, so, you know, I tie this to the work I do within my own organization. And, you know, our job is to help young children and young parents become more resilient and more prepared for success.
Because your organization focuses on early learning?
That's right, under the age of five. We can't do that within the school walls. We have to do that in partnership with families. And families many times can't do that on their own. They've got to be supported by their community. And so as an organization, we really work hard to build relationships with all of these other providers in the community so those families can be as resilient as possible. And the same thing happens on an individual level. You know, as a person that lives in a neighborhood, I've got to be willing to ask my neighbor for help if I can't, for instance, be at school to pick up my child, and I know my neighbor is. And so I think building those relationships, whether it's at the individual level or the organizational level, really helps make children and families more resilient and more connected. And so the trainings that Dawn has referenced, the fun events and activities that we provided, they're, you know, family-friendly and free. That's a big barrier for lots of families sometimes. All those things are, I think, pulling all those threads that tie us together and make us a more connected community.
Because ultimately then it's building, like, on the surface it's an event that people can go to, but underneath it's building a social safety net that people didn't have before.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's stick with that one for a little bit. How did you all decide that that was a strategy that would work in the Matsu Valley?
So all of our primary prevention work is structured around...
What's primary prevention mean?
Sure. So primary prevention are activities that are aimed at the whole community. So again, this idea, we always equate it with strengthening the social fabric. So whether you're a really high-functioning family or a family where maybe things are a little more strenuous at home, you could all benefit from increased social connections in your community. All of that work is built around the protective factors from the strengthening families framework. So we know that those are evidence-based in supporting families and keeping things safe at home. So one of those is social connections for parents.
And so did you, like, poll the community and say what kind of activities folks want? Or people just kind of jumped in and were like, hey, I like dancing.
Yeah, actually.
A little bit of everything. You know, when we were prepared for the show, you'd asked us a little bit about the beauty and the magic of the collective impact. And then that's when the primary prevention committee, their focus is on primary prevention interventions. But we're all, because of the cross-sector piece, you know, we have agency reps from over 30 different organizations coming together, thinking about how do we meet the needs of the families we know. Often it's the families that we serve through work. And so that can be one of the ways that we decide how we move forward and what we target. But then, you know, the beauty also is that we aren't given any parameters of how we dream as a group. And so one of the things we didn't talk about is right now we're exploring the idea of a children's museum. And so that really is not something that we're going to accomplish tomorrow, but really it's just It's really whatever you can dream up, and then this is the group that's going to figure out how can we execute it or make sure it's a feasible idea. And then that's what we're doing at the Children's Museum, is just really at the feasibility, at this community interest stage.
And for all of our listeners, what's happening in your communities to build this social fabric? What's bringing people together? Call us and let us know. The number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. Or in Anchorage, it's 550-8422. So you have this primary prevention piece that's really working on tying people together. What's the next piece, secondary prevention?
Mm-hmm. So secondary prevention strategies generally target systems. All of our work outside of primary prevention, like our primary prevention work, is where we intersect most closely with the community. All of our secondary and then tertiary prevention work is where we really are working to support the systems that are already serving children and families. So secondary prevention activities are those that target high risk children or families, and then tertiary prevention is the work that focuses on families where maybe something has already happened at home, and how do we mitigate the effects of that and then help to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So would you like an example?
I would love an example.
I guess probably our easiest example is when the original 18 partners of RockMetsu were coming together and creating our partnership in 2015, we identified a strategy that we were very excited about, and that was the 0-3 Safe Babies Court model. And so what we saw was this model would allow us to bring services to families with very young children and help to reduce the expectation or the chances that they would end up back in the child welfare system in the future. So reducing repeat maltreatment, which is an area we're very interested in, obviously. So we brought the idea of the court to the Palmer Superior Court and ended up finding a huge champion in Judge White, who took on the work. And within 2 years, we launched a therapeutic court in the Palmer Superior Court called Palmer Families with Infants and Toddlers. And that court serves currently 12 families, with one child in the family being 3 or under.
So how does that court differ than just your normal child in need of aid case?
The child is at the center of this court. The children in the family are at the center of the court. But one of the nice pieces is that parents are offered all sorts of different sort of gold standard services and are supported in their journey by a host of professionals who want to help them work toward reunification. The flip side is that these cases are significantly shorter than those traditionally seen in the child welfare system. So all families are working toward reunification or termination after 6 months. So it's a shorter time frame, a significantly shorter time frame, with a lot of support and a lot of people pulling for you.
And Don, you work with OCS. From your perspective, why is something like this a beneficial system? It's short.
So the exciting thing is we haven't talked about the other strategies that our secondary and tertiary prevention committee are doing. But the things that interface with OCS is what makes it really good for all children is, so with the way the FIT court is designed, is you have champions in every legal sector. And so there is somebody who, you know, from the public defenders, the guardian ad litem's office, the AG's office. So part of that onboarding is getting them the same training, so everybody's on the same page, sharing the same mission and values. But we aren't isolated to just working with children 0-3. So those same champions are really getting this reinvigoration of the values of why we do what we do and serve the families we serve. And so really what is good for FIT court is really good for the rest of OCS. And so, because those same public defenders will also be, you know, working with families who are older than the age of 3.
And I would just add to that too, that same thing can be true for all of the partners that are supporting those families in FIT court as well. And so, you know, my organization is one of those. We're at the table supporting kids, you know, that are enrolled in that program however we can. And we figure out, you know, best practices that maybe we've strived for but been unsuccessful. Or we figure out partnerships with somebody else that's at the table supporting that family that maybe have fallen by the wayside because staff have changed or those types of things. And so we're able to reconnect and build that relationship that better supports those families.
So what kind of supports does your organization specifically provide for families?
So CCS provides Head Start and early Head Start services. So the FIT Court is serving kids under the age of three, families that have kids under the age of three. And a child that is in foster care or a child that is homeless or a child that is very low income is eligible for our services. So we've prioritized and actually reserved some slots within our early Head Start program for families that enroll in FIT Court. And I think something we didn't say also is that this FIT Court is completely voluntary. Mm-hmm. Families have the choice to either, you know, go the FIT Court path or to stay in the court system path. And they choose which way they're going. But part of that participation then is our organization and any other organization coming alongside those families and saying, we want to do everything we can to make you successful, you know, to have your family back together, your kids back in your home. And so we provide all the regular early Head Start services, helping that child in the classroom, helping that family to set their own personal goals, to accomplish those goals, helping connect them to all of our, you know, regular early Head Start community providers, whether that's behavioral health or substance abuse or housing or whatever it might be.
And so then are the parents also connected to resources like if they need help with substance issues or if they need help with learning to budget, things like that?
So that is one way we've been very lucky to expand beyond the 0-3 model is we've actually built in funding for behavioral health services for families who are unable to pay for services. So we have contracts with a couple of behavioral health providers, and we're working on a contract with a mental health provider so that parents can access those services even if, for example, they lost Medicaid when their child was removed from their home.
Okay. And so In the FIT Court model with OCS's involvement, does that change the role of the caseworker at all, or does that change the role of other ways OCS is supporting families and children?
When the court was designed, there's a dedicated OCS worker who gets to go through all the training with 0-3, so they get the framework and the philosophy. And so as the court grows, there will be another dedicated OCS worker. And so, I'm sorry, what was your question?
My question was, how is the process with OCS in terms of like developing a case plan and having a case worker who supports children mm-hmm. and families? Is that a different process for people who are going through the FIT Court versus... Okay.
So I think the uniqueness of the FIT Court is sort of the similar parallel processes that we have with other strategies that are supporting what OCS does in the secondary and tertiary work. And so typically, it's always the onus and the responsibility has been on the worker to make the magic happen with limited resources. But with the way the FIT Court designs is, you know, whatever the needs are of the family, the group can get together and figure out, I can fill that need or I can bridge that need. Or then the larger scope of things is creating the programs or those connections or reserving those slots. And so that's the nice thing is where it's not falling on the OCS worker to figure out all these things happen. So with that collaboration with the other partners. But the nice thing, though, is that creates those relationships with those agencies. So, again, it helps with all of our children where there's those relationships that are starting with OCS workers and then the FIT Court partners. So it's, again, you know, I think it makes it better for all families.
Okay. In every single answer, you guys have brought up the word relationship. Why is, I guess let's start with, first, how did you develop this group of organizations with very different roles, but in a solid relationship? Like, what has gone into developing that?
So when ROC MATSU was created out of the findings of a community health needs assessment that the MATSU Health Foundation did, where the community identified our number one goal as all children are well cared for and safe. And as we started looking, as the Health Foundation started looking at what it meant to create that vision with community, what we quickly realized was that that is not that is a complex social problem that one organization can't solve, but also it's a complex social problem with no system developed to address it. So
what do you mean no system developed to address it? Wouldn't people say that that's why Office of Children's Services is there?
Well, and definitely the Office of Children's Services is a piece of that system, but really OCS intervenes after the point where maltreatment has happened, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're looking to create a vision of all children being well cared for and safe, we're hoping we intervene before things get to that point. So we essentially brought together 18 influential champions in our community who all owned a part or a piece of the work of keeping children well cared for and safe.
So like
Mark Lackey with Head Start. We had representatives from both of our local tribes and primary care and behavioral health and the Office of Children's Services with Dawn and the school district. And brought everybody together and said, you know, if we are to create this vision of a community where all children are well cared for and safe, how do we feel about trying to do our work differently? And it was kind of amazing how quickly the answer was yes. I think everybody who was in the room recognized that they had this long-term vision, the same vision our community had, but maybe their mission didn't individually get them where they wanted to go. And so we started working on this idea that we could create our own system of prevention and we could structure what it looked like in our community to have primary prevention and secondary prevention and tertiary prevention happening in a way that was responsive to the unique challenges and resources that we already possessed in MATSU.
So as part of this collaborative, I've talked to other organizations who are trying to solve problems. Larger issues like homelessness and whatnot. And you end up getting all these people in the room who are all working on this, but don't necessarily know what the other parts are doing. Mm-hmm. And then I've also heard many organizations comment on the fact that you're actually competing with one another for mm-hmm. funding and you're mm-hmm. competing for this little chunk of the pie. How do you deal with those challenges? Like, Mark, you're...
Yeah, I think we've been very successful at navigating those waters. I mean, it's definitely, especially, in areas where there is a competition for dollars and those types of things. But I think we have to go back to that word relationships, and the people at the table typically are decision makers in their organizations. And they are these strategies and these things that we're working on require us to be working together. And so if the people at the table can all agree this is what we're going to do and this is the partners we need at the table, this is the role that my organization can fill. And maybe this is the role that your organization can fill, and we make that successful. We've got a great kind of animated video on our website that talks about how we've really worked to break down those silos that are our organizations. And come together in our community to solve these problems. And to me, that's really a great visual representation of the work we're trying to do.
The other piece mm-hmm. I would add to that is I think we were very lucky. Lisa Wade, who I think was on here last mm-hmm. week, very early in the forming of Rock MATSU, really helped us to establish practices for our collaborative that have very intentionally built the relationships that are necessary to get people to want to collaborate and to address that, knowing what each other do, but also knowing each other as human beings. Mm-hmm. So you have a different level of trust and relationship building that allows us to have uncomfortable conversations and also dream together and kind of bridge the gap between those two parts of our work.
What does that look like to get to know each other as human beings? And how comfortable was that in a professional setting to break those boundaries?
I would joke that it's some of us in this room are not huggers, but you become compelled to want to hug the other people within the group that you share this common mission with. So that's just really bizarre. And I'm a non-hugger typically, so I'd be one of those people. But so it is really at a level like that where you become friends and not just the partnership piece. But, you know, when I was thinking of one of the examples is, and I think it's that spirit of cooperation and doing what's best for our community is what keeps us from chasing after scarce dollars. And so one of the examples through the Fed Court is, you know, we were looking at what are the best practice models for working with our families, because you're not just helping a child through their own trauma, but you're helping a family through their trauma. And so child parent psychotherapy were one of the interventions that the 0 to 3 was saying, this is really what is the evidence-based interventions for families. And so one of our local organizations, they were contracted to get this figured out. But instead of them being the end-all, be-all for all families in child-parent psychotherapy, now they're helping bring in the training so other organizations. So it's not just so that organization holds a special skill set, but they're like, this is magic. Everybody needs it. And so now they're taking that shift to help bring in other trainers and help bring on other, because there's lots of behavioral health providers. Mm-hmm. And so expanding and not just keeping that secret for themselves.
So a lot of people can jump in and be part of this. I'd like to go to the phone lines now. We have Carolyn from Anchorage on the line. Carolyn, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yes, this is Caroline. I appreciate the fact that you folks are working together with others. Years ago, I worked in corporate contributions for one of the major corporations, Standard Oil it was by name, I'm sure people remember. Mid-80s to the end of the 80s was a group that unfortunately did not make it, but they used to provide provide kindergarten, and they took very young children, babies, and extended the hours so parents that are working would have a chance to get their children some attention. The latest information on child development that I have heard, and I find it really surprising, is that one of the most important things a child gets from 0 to 3 is a sense of trust. The love is there from the parents to the children. So my question, I realize you folks are up against the people that don't want to spend any money on this stuff or any money on anything virtually. Do you have a chance to look at the forward funding needed for dysfunctional families and children that are damaged, such as what it costs per year for McLaughlin? Not that every child ends up there, obviously, but that at the same time, to invest as do countries like Norway, Denmark, et cetera, in the early years. And we need to look where it's not a problem and try to figure out how to apply some of that, and it sounds like that's exactly what you folks are doing. But the other thing, main question is, is there anybody that's providing pre-parent counseling for folks? Because this is a generational thing. People do what they know, and sometimes what they know is not that good because of what was done to them. So that's the main thing, is are you able to help prospective parents who want to know what is the right thing to do with their children?
Thanks very much, Caroline.
Yeah, so several things there. I think pre-parents, yes, there are programs out there providing services. My program is one of those. So Early Head Start provides services to moms that are expecting. There's also Nurse Family Partnership that provides those services as well. Really, again, tackling those things, it's really hard. My entire career has been trying to prove the fact that prevention saves us all money. And it's really hard to do when, you know, you have urgent needs in your community, when you have crime or you have those things that are right in your face. But the beauty of what we've done with ROC is that we've tackled both ends. You know, we've really tackled all these secondary issues and those tertiary problems that we have know and are ever present in our community. But at the same time, we've got this dedicated group of people working on preventing all those problems from happening so that, you know, I'm really excited about 5 years down the road where we meet in the middle, you know, and we say all these kids that we worked with when they were 3 and 4 and their parents, you know, they're now in middle school and we're not having all the resources go towards juvenile justice. And so it's been really fabulous to be a part of that effort to bring so many, you know, I'm in meetings all the time with early childhood folks. But early childhood folks need those housing people, and we need the people that are providing food, and we need those behavioral health providers and substance abuse providers. And that's what ROC has really allowed us to do. Families have complex needs. I can't meet them all, but if I have friends and partners, we can do that better.
So you have people involved with housing who are part of this collective?
We do. I mean, one of the primary maybe housing partners that we've got is Wasilla Area Seniors. I mean, they're providing a lot of senior services, and you don't typically think of seniors as being part of this picture, but they're grandparents and they're community members, and they care about what's going on with families. So they're at the table just as often as I am. So it's been great to see this kind of broad coalition across our community.
Was that a hard sell, or were they already like, well, this is logical. Yes, this is part of the continuum.
We actually were, the individual from Wasilla Area Seniors was a partner of Rock Mansu in a former position. And when he switched to WASI, he said that he wanted to continue. And we have our partners represent a lot of diverse expertise, and we want it all. So, of course, we were glad to keep him with us. And I think what it's done is offer us the opportunity to dream about some future work that could bridge that multi-generational line that's so important.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Caroline. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about Rock Mansu and different approaches to prevent child maltreatment. Have you tried building relationships between organizations in your community? What's worked? What hasn't? Share your experiences and join the conversation by calling 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Don, when we started this conversation, you said that you got involved with Rock Mansu because you were teaching classes on adverse childhood experiences. Can you talk a little bit about what those classes include and then also why that's such an integral part of the services Rock Mansu is continuing to provide?
It was the ACE Interface Trainers, and so it's a module that's run by Laura Porter, and Dr. Ando was one of our trainers. And so basically one of the, you know, the godfathers of the study with Vince Valetti, you know, the study from the 80s, the idea behind that was just for us to understand the lifelong impacts of childhood experiences. And so, And so the neat thing about learning together with some of our original champions is that was a time for us to get to know each other as well, but to be in a room for several days with other champions who share, because it's, if I could backtrack a little bit, mm-hmm. I work in a job where I really don't talk about what I do, and you don't really get to talk about your day.
With OCS? Because of,
an OCS worker. And so it was a neat opportunity for at least, you know, I'm still not talking about my day-to-day work, but we're in a room with other behavioral health providers and other people who really care about children and see what our kids experience and that want to, you know, shift that tide. And so one of your questions earlier were about, or the caller was asking about scarce resources, but one of the beauties of the ACE Interface training is that one of the pieces of that is that we are the ones that we've been waiting for. And so the caller talked about trust, and so it might not be programs, it may not be new money, new staff, all the things that we wish we could have when we're in human services or working with families and nonprofits where we're asked to do so much on a shoestring budget. That still exists. But when you can shift your mindset remember why you do the work you do. And just, you know, the relationships that I have with Mark and Desiree and our other partners, those are the things that strengthen me to be able to give my best regulated self to the families, to my coworkers that I serve. So that really goes back to the trust piece that the other caller was talking about, is just so fundamental to the work that we do. And so that doesn't cost money. You know, it's just changing your tempo, the way you look at things, and it's just... So there's nothing that has changed in terms of resources or funding, but it's made me a healthier being. It's helped recenter me to the work that I do. And so the idea behind deploying this ACE interface trainer, so that contract is now over. And so in partnership with the Alaska Resilience Initiative, and I will actually give a shout out to Michelle Boyden because she deserves her name being on the radio. So she's a part-time school counselor with the Metsu Borough School District. And she has really taken this on along, you know, with some of our other partners. So being able to capture so much information and articulate it in a way that is meaningful and understandable is not my thing. And so I haven't continued to be an ACE's trainer, but I want to see that work happen and be meaningful. And so when we did the trainings, the amazing thing is this is the first time that some people who have been at the training have felt like, oh, I see you, I hear you. And so there's never been a voice that's been given to some of the struggles that our parents or our adults have experienced as children. And so that's one of the neat experiences about being that trainer, is that it becomes a very cathartic experience for those who attend, because it's the first time where people are able to make those connections of how it's the things that I couldn't control as a child that happened to me that have impacted me as an adult. Mm-hmm. And so it's your, to be able to watch people come to those conclusions and understand those things about themselves of like, you know, brings it back to what we believe in, is that, you know, people are doing the best they can or the best that they know how. And so as a trainer, that's a piece of just where you get to see that happen, where you're helping people in their journeys, but also you're helping spread the word of like, you know, the focus is on asking the questions about the what and not the why. And again, that's not a funding thing. Just shifting how you ask questions and the way you look at behaviors with the what's and not the whys, that's not money. Mm-hmm. And so again, you're building trust and you're building the whole, I see you, you exist, you matter. And those are just, it's just that shift in the way we work with families and children.
And so Desiree, is that sort of the motivation behind having these open public trainings around ACEs to help families kind of understand their own histories and connect with each other?
It is definitely a piece of it, is helping generally spread the information throughout the community that there is this relationship between trauma in childhood and the potential for negative life outcomes. And I think that, you know, through offering these, we've been offering them monthly for a while and took a break for the summer and are getting back into monthly community free offerings. It's a wonderful opportunity for community members to take in this information in a way that lets them maybe be more compassionate in their own families, but maybe even with the families they see in the grocery store. You know, it's really information that changes the lens that you view families through and children, and maybe even the lens through which you view the behavior of children who maybe you don't think are behaving well. It also helps us raise our general level of community readiness to tackle larger and larger issues around how we protect kids and how we strengthen families and support each other as a community. So at this point, we've had almost 2,000 community members trained. And we use this in partnership with the Matsu Borough School District and offer these trainings to schools who request them for their staff, because we think that schools are an excellent place to get this information so that they can use that approach that Dawn was talking about, the, you know, it's not what's wrong with you, it's what's happened to you. Mm-hmm.
To our listeners, have you learned about ACEs? How did that affect you and your view of parenting and your views of yourself? Share your experiences by calling us at 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 here on Talk of Alaska. You mentioned your partnership with the school district. Mat-Su Borough schools are all trauma-informed, is that correct?
They are working towards being all trauma-informed, yeah. So we started with a cohort of five schools that were interested in exploring this idea of becoming a trauma-informed school, and we partnered with the school district and with the National Council for Behavioral Health. And those five schools went through a year-long process of training and education and having a chance to do group work and reflection on their schools and identify an area where they would like to improve in being trauma-informed. The interesting piece about that work is you don't get to the end and say, yeah, we have a gold star and we're trauma-informed. It's really more like we will help you on the start of your journey towards becoming trauma-informed.
What exactly does that mean to be trauma-informed?
I always reference it's creating an environment where every child has an equal opportunity to learn, whether it's the child who, you know, went home last night and had a parent who helped them with their homework and then they had a good dinner and then they went to bed and they woke up and there was a parent there to support them getting off to school, or the child who went home to a home in chaos and domestic violence and a police response and woke up in the morning and put on the same clothes and skipped breakfast and made it to the school. It's working on the policies and the practices and the environment and the education of the staff, sort of all of these things so that you can apply that trauma-informed lens of, you know, what's happened and how can we help you moving forward. I don't know, actually, Mark, CCS has done a lot of work on being trauma-informed. I don't know if you want to expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've always had the kind of idea that we need to respond to each child and each family individually and meet them wherever they're at. But, you know, as a classroom teacher that has 20 kids, many times it's hard to take that moment to pause and say, what is it that's happened, instead of just saying, why is this happening? You know, we've got so many other things to do. And so just changing that perspective, I think the ACEs training is foundational for our community and our providers, because it's changing the mind shift in our heads. You know, it's looking at our own lives and things that have happened in our childhood or in people that we've loved, and saying that the change starts with me. And if I can change how I look at this child, if I can change how I look at this family, if I can change how I look at my students in my classroom, and respond in a way that's more sensitive to those things that have happened, maybe they haven't happened to me and I have no real awareness of what life is like in those situations, but I'm going to respond to that child in a way that is appropriate to what they've experienced. I think that changes our community. Mm-hmm.
So we actually have 10 schools going through their year-long process with the National Council now and are preparing for a cohort of 15 schools. So we are definitely, it's work that's really supported by the Mat-Su Borough School District, but it's also work that individual schools are consistently asking for. So we've tried to find ways to continue to grow our resources to support each of them as they're ready to start on this journey.
So I've heard arguments that we focus too much on trauma and we're focusing too much on what people have endured and not enough on what people's strengths are. Mm-hmm. When people make that argument, and here you're an organization that's really helping educate about the effects of trauma, what is your response?
I think my response would be is that the basic fundament of the ACEs training is stressed brains can't learn. So it doesn't really matter about what looks like coddling or something else to an uninformed person, is that the bottom line is that, you know, we're trying to get the kids back to being regulated so they can learn. And so even the skills that schools are implementing are good for all children. Mm-hmm. And so learning to teach all of our children how to regulate, how to get dysregulated intentionally and then re-regulated, incorporating movement on a regular basis instead of trying to get through all the reading and writing curriculum, you know, it's astounding to just see, you know, how it's just using good science for all kids.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back, were you going to?
No, go ahead.
Oh. And so I think, you know, for me, but with the, it doesn't mean trauma-informed doesn't mean we don't have high expectations. But for our children, the expectations are just reasonable and appropriate. Again, it goes to what Mark was talking about, is meeting our kids where they are at. And so we still, you know, we know that part of having high expectations and routines and all those other things that are good for children are still what, so coddling does, or so it's what sometimes feels like coddling isn't coddling. It's about meeting the child, because we could keep having that child in timeout or reset or in the principal's office, but we're not going to be having that child learning if they're using separation and exclusion and things that we know aren't good for relationships and trust building.
So Carolyn hit it on the head. I mean, it's about building trust, you know, and you can tell a child what their strengths are until you're blue in the face, or a family what their strengths are. But if they don't trust you, or they don't live in a safe environment, or their immediate needs are going to be to find safety and to find trust. And so building that trust for that, either that child or for that family or in that school setting, I think has to happen. And then you can start talking about, you are a funny kid. You've got a great sense of humor. That's a real strength that you can use. Mm-hmm. And let's build on that. Let's take that and put it to a good math grade, or, you know, to participating in other areas within your community. So it's both ends, right? It's building trust and strong relationships, and also building strength.
We are going to take another really quick break, and then we're going to come back to Talk of Alaska and focus in on how do you build that trust.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about building trust and building communities in order to strengthen our families and protect our children. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-478-8255. Let us know what's worked in your community. 1-800-478-8255. You all keep going back to building trust. You're building trust between organizations so they're not so siloed. Building trust with families and with children. How do you do that? What strategies have you implemented for building trust in the early learning setting? Mark.
So that's a great example. That's the one I was just thinking about in my head. And so we've really taken our trauma-informed training and tried to be very strategic in how we build trust with our families. What happens in our setting many times is that by the time we're able to build really solid trust, we're halfway through the school year. And so then we've got just a few months left to really take that newfound trust and engage that family to make some changes or to, you know, to grow and increase strength. And so we're actively working to build that trust as soon as possible. So the way we do that is we offer these ACEs trainings right up front as soon in the school year as we can, so that families have kind of this foundational knowledge. And then we say, if that resonated with you, if that made you think about your own childhood and how you are as an adult, and if you'd like to know more about, you know, preventing ACEs in your children's lives, we have these parenting groups, and we'll work through a strengthening families or smart connections, different curriculums we have where families can build trust in small group settings and with our staff.
How do you invite people to those conversations? Like, how do you...
The ACEs training many times opens that door. Mm-hmm. And so when people hear that training, sometimes it can be traumatic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be enlightening. You know, people respond to that very differently. And so we use that as the door opener. You know, yes, this is information. It's powerful information. People respond differently. Here's areas where you can discuss that and you can learn more about it. And then we make sure that we work with our families in whatever avenue they feel comfortable doing. And it builds that trust relationship with our staff, between our staff and that family, so that hopefully we're able to engage that family, develop that relationship of trust, and move forward sooner in the school year.
I know that the Matsu Health Foundation, which houses Rock Matsu, is very focused on data. Mm-hmm. Do you have data that is showing that these different strategies and techniques and trust building in ACEs classes are effective?
At this point, what we have are some output data on just what we're doing. We are currently working to create a shared measures system to track the outcomes long term. It's a fundamental piece of our work that we are still in the process of creating.
And it's hard. It's that career-long fight that I mentioned earlier of saying that prevention, pays off, you know, long term. It's a very, very hard struggle, but we've tackled it right up front, and we've been figuring out how we're going to measure those things and what does success look like.
What does success look like in this situation?
I think at this point, a lot of it is anecdotal. And so, and it would be just the stories that people share with us. Yeah. So with the dance party that we did at the Menard Center, there was 1,100 families and children in attendance. I mean, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of social connections.
Yeah. But yeah. There, you know, people who did play a role with just asking people, you know, categories of did you meet a friend or why you came. And so part of us, you know, some of us who were volunteering, we were intentionally talking to people about their experiences, and the feedback was phenomenal. And so we're having another dance party on Saturday on the green behind the L House and between the Colony Inn in Palmer after the fair parade. So last year was the first time we had done that. And so one of the things that stood out to me is, because I'm, you know, the assertive person in the group, you know, I was literally surveying people. And I had a grandma was just like, you know, I'm new to this community. And she was just like, I am so excited that I chose this community. Because she felt isolated as a grandparent raising her grandchildren. She thought that was a unique experience. But for her to move to a community and be new and be like, wow, this is a community who cares about me and my role and my grandchildren. And so those are the really are some of the feedback we've gotten about some of the work that we do.
And I think success is I think we have successes just all around us as well. The establishment of Fit Court is a huge success, and we're about to have individual successes as a result of that. You know, this child that was removed from their home, whose families now are surrounded by supports, who were enrolled in Early Head Start, and they're back together. I mean, those are successes we're about to experience. We haven't talked about the training that Ptarmigan Pediatrics has done, and bringing that ACEs information into a primary care setting so that all the kids that come into their clinic and the families get information about ACEs and how important that is. Honestly, I think that those strong relationships that we built within ROC that have kept us at the table, that have allowed us to have all of these wonderful collaborations, those have led to successes when we see these programs up and running and making our community a better place for families and for kids. I think that's, you know, there's nothing that drives success like success. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been amazing to be a part of.
Are there challenges you've had to overcome as well?
No.
Yeah. It's all been easy. Yeah. Great. So
it's kind of funny, those of us who have been participants in ROC Matsu since the beginning, I reference the one uncomfortable meeting we had. And I think universally everybody knows that was our really, truly, I feel, our one uncomfortable meeting. And we used that to change the way we work together. And that was when Lisa helped us to kind of restructure our meetings and restructure even how we visioned together in a way that has really seen us through. So I actually struggle a little bit to consider what our challenges have been. You know, we're lucky that we live in a community where everybody is so poised to do this work. So there is not a single system. I mean, like the Fit Court, you know, I just like cold called 7 judges. And they said, yes, we'd love to. And our work with the school district was, you know, the school district actually reaching out to us and saying, what can you do for our schools? We've yet to have, you know, the Office of Children's Services has been an amazing partner in this since day one. We've yet to have a system that we approached that wasn't ready to join us on this journey. And we see that, like Mark says, success invites success. So we have, you know, 18 strategies that span that public health prevention spectrum, and our partnership is continually growing. The more we do, the more places community members and community professionals find to connect with the work and want to join us.
So then, what advice do you give other communities who are like, well, if it's working in Matsu, why can't it work in Anchorage? Why can't it work in, you know, Barrow?
Start with relationships.
Yeah, it absolutely can. It can work in whatever community. You know, it takes some leaders and it takes some champions, I think. And it takes setting that stage that, you know, my organization or maybe myself as an individual, I can do this much. But if I can, you know, get to know my neighbor across the street, you know, I can be a coach in youth soccer and he can be a coach in youth basketball. And we're impacting a lot of kids' lives in a positive way there. And so...
But what about families who just don't have the time and the resources to be the basketball coach?
Oh, absolutely. Those are just examples I think that some people, you know, can sign up for. But it doesn't take any time or resources just to get to know that neighbor, you know, to be out in your front yard and to build those relationships.
Or to be the parent or the community member who approaches the parent with the child having a breakdown in the grocery store and says, hey, I totally understand. I've been there. I've got kids. You know, do you need any help? You're doing a great job. I mean, sometimes I think positive reinforcement and the power of just knowing that you're not alone goes a long way for families who, you know, maybe having a moment.
To bring us back to the relationship piece within the collective impact framework, you know, one of the things that Rock Matsu does in all of its committees and ad hoc committees is we start every meeting with a connection activity. And so there is some intentionality with the way that our meetings are structured. And sometimes it's funny and sometimes it's a little bit more somber, but there are questions that we ask to sort of pause, and it's sort of a time for mindfulness or to getting to know each other. And so although time is very precious, that I think is that part of it, the payoff with that intentionality with connecting and team building. And that piece of it is because we're constantly recruiting people to the table, especially at the ad hoc committee level. And it gives the new people a sense of connection. So because it's a, you know, it can be overwhelming to come to a group. It's like coming to a group of like best friends almost, and then if you're the outsider, but with the way the meeting is structured is trying to bring them into that fold where they feel connected.
Like what kind of questions would you ask at the beginning?
We've had silly questions, but sometimes, you know, Mark has led us with just things that we're grateful for. You know, I've been in a meeting with Desiree where we just have a silly one about our first car. And so sometimes we'll talk about our challenges or things that we're looking forward to, but it's just, I'm the crier out of the group. So usually it takes us somewhere else, even though the question might be one thing, mm-hmm. and then the person who answers the question sets the tone, and then there becomes some sharing about either things that we're struggling with or things that we're excited about. And then in turn, it's like, I learn from my other people within the cohort, and we have some really just amazing folks and so who have adventurous lives, and so there's lots of just learning beyond just our mission sharing.
I will say one place we are very lucky at Rock Matsu is that we had a funder who supported us in our creation. So I do think strongly believe that community-created responses to these complex social problems are always going to be best, right? We know best what's happening in our community. I think there's a role for philanthropy here to support communities in being able to create their own solutions.
And that is all we have time for today. You've been listening to Talk of Alaska. My guests today were Desiree Scheppler, Director of Rock Matsu, Mark Lackey, Executive Director of CCS Early Learning, and Don Adams, Regional Permanency Specialist for the Office of Children's Services. Thank you all for being here. Thank you to our listeners. This is Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.